Blog Talk Radio.
Effects. Just that brief opportunity for us to lean into the conversation together, listen to a bit of music, hopefully equip yourself with a nice glass of something that inspires or soothes. Maybe you were thinking of the days of the emergence of the coffee house. Oh, there's an argument could be made that it was part of the development of Masonic purpose. The coffee houses where in Britain, it was in England, it was only been allowed. It was where business was conducted, where serious conversation was held over this and around this fascination with coffee. Different coffee houses developed themes. Some of them appealed to insurance brokers, Barclays, some to bankers, some rare lawyers conducted their business, poets and writers, and affinity coffee houses. Those the French, the inspiring Frenchmen, did it as well. However, in their coffee houses, women were quite purposefully there. They didn't seem to have so much difficulty with the intellectual prowess of women. And anyway, be what it may, we may have grown in part because of the value add, the experience. We walked away having shared some profoundness, whatever that might be. Even when you're a schoolboy, it's important just to blurt it out, isn't it? Do you remember? Put your ideas out there and see what people think. Do you remember the first time you did that? And then when you weren't laughed at or criticized by some lout, some of the ideas did begin to gel, and perhaps you shared them and other people let you know that. Share them with other people. Freemasonry, yes, it's a meal best appreciated when you have an understanding of what's being served at the banquet. What's being served is some scent, it's almost magical. The stuff that Harry Potter would love to have. she just the writer just didn't have this added capacity. But imagine, he would be given the elements, the tools needed to develop character. It wasn't that we're born wonderful in every way. Like, oh my goodness. Although in some cultures, young men are still taught that. It's the illusion, of course. you think that you're wonderful, then you are. it's a bit silly when I say it that way. Something more serious goes on as we mature, grow up, develop an emotional maturity. We start to wonder about these questions, and you know, the first time you hear them, it doesn't mean necessarily that the question itself makes sense, nor does it mean we have an answer. Although often in our haste, we'll rush to come up with an answer because we're self-conscious about appearing clueless or unguarded. So better to come up with a clumsy answer than no answer, or to say to somebody, I haven't thought of that. It's all a needed moment, do you mind? Or these are the ideas, the fragments that I have right now. It's all in the presentation, brother. It's all in the presentation. There is no competition for space or competition for rightness. It's the world clamors, men clamor to be right. Well, they're right. There you go. If you're looking for that. But the meagerness of that is profound, don't you think? By declaring that you need to be right and everything coming out of your cake hole is right, you've divided the world around you and us into 50-50. 50% of the time you're right, the other half, 50%, is wrong. Is that really where you were going with that? Far more interesting to follow our Greek fellows and to provoke the thinking of other people, the differences, to have the intellectual ability, the mastery, the confidence to listen. Now, there you go again, Pythagoras, you rascal. To listen to the differences in the thinking and judgments of other people around you as a necessary tool, lesson, vehicle, if you will, to develop your own ideas. When you think about it, it does have some elements of profoundness to it. Thank goodness they kicked that one off of, 400 years BC? Roughly. I can be smug about a century BC here or there. Not today. A century means a great deal, but yeah, so long ago, it doesn't really matter. Matters a lot. Masonry adjusted to historical specificity. Oh my. Unpacking something that I blame brighter minds than me. I blame the historians around us. Not the droll that I was handed out that the whole world was history was just military conquest. Like, oh my, breathtakingly stunning and so biased. No context. But that did in a pinch. Eh? You don't have history, you need to teach a kid something. Oh, I teach them that. There was a lot written. 2019. Research has gone on in so many different areas. The curiosity has expanded, and the tools to help achieve and arrive at answers, to run experiments, is just, it's like fantastical thinking. If I think about what the world was like when I was a boy, and now I can sit here in front of a computer conversing with the world, and I have this access to this world library in front of me at this keyboard. It's just breathtaking. No, I'm not one of the people that throws my hands in the air with the jazz hands. Oh my gosh, I'm overwhelmed. It's like, overwhelmed sometimes is natural, isn't it? Overwhelmed, you mean I should have answers for every question ever put to me on the spot? Come on, develop a little perspective, eh? It's a good life. And masonry does provide answers if you get it. If you get it. There's so many variations on the theme. Are we about here in the Upper Canada to move forward? We always have been in a way. Yeah. Only I'm convinced we're quite capable of doing it in balance. I'm not so much for being on hierarchies as I am on balance. I have a number of priorities. We have a number of priorities, not one on top and one on the bottom. We have a number, and where they are in the rank depends on the moment and the situation. Politics, I guess, in a way, everybody has a politic of their own mind. And for us to actually give somebody credit for something or power over us, that's us. It's nothing to do with them. Anyway, here's a little something I think you'll like to help you settle into the show today. We're going to hear some remarkable poetry from one of the post-romantic poets, John Keats. He died of tuberculosis. He was only 25 years old, but his work was remarkable. And from previous shows here, I've talked to you a little bit about what the romantic period was, and want you to think about what the world would have been like had you been unable to express certain thoughts or affections or observations of the world around because it just wasn't done. Get your head around that. It's like saying that men don't express compassion because it's just not done. Can you imagine? Yeah. Anyway, this is a kind of a remarkable writer. Don't like all of his work, but his arrangements. This is Alone and I from Herbie Hancock's catalog. Freddie Hubbard playing with him, Dexter Gordon, Butch Warren, Billy Higgins. Yeah. I don't know if he ever has to name drop with that kind of talent. Now think about this. This is how a lodge works. Just sit back. This is a lodge working. Everybody playing different parts. There you go. Thank you. You get the metaphor about a large practice, inspiration, timing. It's not a competition. Not to show who can shine their shoes the brightest or speak the loudest or knock the hardest. Can you do it together? When you can, sounds like this. The finesse, not the clumsiness or the awkwardness or the silliness. Yeah. That's how it works. You work together. And perhaps as a very renowned music instructor once taught me, and no, I'm not a musicologist, but I happen to be in a university course learning the violin. And the professor told us, and most of the people at Swift were majoring in music, and he told us, hey, there's no prize for going first. You raise your hand, everybody hits the note at the same time. Adjust. It's about adjustment. Do you get it? A lot of people don't. A lot of men don't. That's what separates the talent from the audience. Here. Freemasonry adjusted to historical specificity. Think about that one. Adjustment is key to the application of our practices. In that way, it is an affront to the authority that normally forms democratic states. Freemasonry is, in that light, more influential, because though it is unenforceable, it is ethical life. It's like the hint, the impression. The key to Masonic values is an embrace given, not uniformity, but unenforceable. Where this dedication is strong, Freemasonry thrives. It is adjusted to the historical specificity of each nation, each province, each district in practice, and theoretical formulations. That is the foundation of achievement of authentic, sustaining expansion of respect for human dignity. where knowledge is valued, where our scholars pass along knowledge to less literate brethren, as we have also done. Service in all its many shared aspects is deep and effective. If we apply a political analysis, it fails. So we apply reason and have successfully passing along the dignity and mystery of Freemasonry to endless generations. The Constitution establishes the fundamental principles that must govern the order we are in the process of building. It is the conceptual starting point that provides access. As we look out, the landscape of Freemasonry is varied. In places it thrives or fades, always influences by adjustments, few of which are within our control, outcomes of decisions. Out of our practices, we find contributions to the development of brethren who are conscientious, responsible, and committed to the order's future. This is decisive when considered the relevance of the craft, or irrelevance. We submit to a necessary willingness to the study and expression of our Masonic values. Perhaps nothing else keeps us from philosophical discussion more than the fear of limiting the frame of reference. More than the fear of limiting the frame of reference when, while anecdotal considerations flourish in a world of pernicious prejudices inherited from the darkest area of cultural tradition, it thrives. You'd almost think it's the anecdote. The anecdote. The anecdote to the unchanging mysteries of the world. The things we can't control that we don't want to have happen. The loss of our parents. Death. Illness, you know. Don't necessarily want it, but it happens. It's a mystery in a way. We call it natural, and it is. What balances, what counterbalances those things off? I'm not one that quickly runs to a definition of success. One considers happiness part of that. I've seen such isolation and aggravation of the soul. Through some interesting relationships with people of enormous wealth and power. No, I would not wish that on my worst enemy. Not for all the money in the world. Happiness. Being content with what you have. Striving. Being ambitious. Those things are important. But the weak-minded, and I do claim it's a weakness, will throw their hands in the air as if a compassionate life is somehow weak, wrong, just because it's complicated. Here, this is from music from Lenny Tristano from 1955. Good year for big, huge cars. It's called You Go to My Head. Thank you. Lenny Tristano. Groovy. Yeah, I just aged myself, didn't I? Life's good. Somebody has to do it. We're so fortunate listening to that music. Listening to good jazz. There's all kinds of jazz. There's crap too, but sweet music like this tends to settle the mind in some ways. And if you're fortunate, you find that it's contemplative and instills it. Makes you think about things and put things in perspective. It never seems to escalate tensions. It seems to resolve. Settle the mind, settle the soul. Clarify purpose. Masonry gives us so much of this. No, as you're sitting there, or listening or driving there on the road with your headphones on, or sitting in the park or alone in a comfortable place with a glass of wine or maybe a little kvass or to get the opportunity to put things into perspective for yourself. Unlike other aspects of masonry, Masonic effects is never ever directed to be an upsell. Never once to impose anything on you. You do that yourself. If you're going to become credible leadership, first thing you do to become a leader where people would turn and pay some attention to you is by having something useful to say. And you can speak to people, communicate to people in a lot of ways. Actions speak louder than words. Absolutely. If you want to know the truth of a person's nature, watch their behavior. A good friend treats somebody in a certain way. A charlatan says one thing and acts contrary. A lettered gentleman is not necessarily a pleasant person. And oftentimes, people inherit turmoil. So we can have a sense of compassion. Be aware of these biases that play on our minds, though. Compassion fatigue, where we're just tired. Does that make sense that a man might not want to respond to your effort to solicit funds for the charity of the moment? We can give him a bit of credit if we think about the enormity of the reality of the world around us. Nobody really cares whether you're tired of hearing or how often or the effects of endless requests. You can understand in your mind how somebody would want to run away from it all and turn it all off, but it's not that easy, is it? So, in that way, Masonic effects is never about white, old, and middle class, upper class status. It certainly, we don't tolerate here, we don't tolerate a fool. You may have a natural inclination to be a fool, but not here. Go somewhere, go over there. Here's where thoughtful men need to have a conversation, thoughtful people. Just for a few moments, that's all. Part of our history that we've inherited and embellished along the years. The stories get better in the telling. Have to do with these bursts of information. Although I wish that I was alive in Upper Canada 500 years from now or 1,000 years from now, when we're not so self-conscious about art and symbolism as we are now. Oh, it's like a church basement. The sense of aesthetic has to be ripped out. We can't have the information, artwork, mural, tapestries. We can't have any of that. It conveys too much information. And my goodness, oh my goodness, nothing unique. How many of you have seen the same three tracing boards? They were sold, all through the area. So, if you were at the back of the truck, you've got that set, but don't ever think that that's the bee's knees. That's all there is. Have you not thought about it? It's like saying the Mona Lisa is the only portrait. Come on. Look. It looks sweet. Let there be light, and there was. We don't even have a model. How, you know, we just don't do it. It's not that we can't. We just never thought about it. And then, how do you convey if you're going along with a notion like, you know, you've often heard this: beauty is truth, and truth is beauty. Well, how would you convey that without words? In your lodge, here's a little John Keats, an English romantic poet. I'll leave it to you to understand the notion of romanticism in that period. He wrote along with brother Lord Byron and Percy Bysshe Shelley, really notable people. This is one of his. Just a short burst of his work, quite compelling for particularly for a young guy. You can tell it had access to an education. Bright Star. This is probably one of the most famous opening lines of a poem. Bright star, would I were steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendor hung aloft the night, watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient, sleepless eremite. The moving waters at their priest-like task of pure ablution round earth's human shores, or grazing on the new soft fallen mask of snow upon the mountains and the moors. No, yet still steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever its soft fall and swell, awake forever in a sweet unrest, still to hear her tender taken breath, and so live forever, or else swoon in death. What's he portraying? What image comes to mind when you unpack the words? He's saying something to us without saying it to us, without being so crass as to show us and tell us. It's like Hitchcock's sense of murder. The illusion. The power of the illusion only for those who have the ability to find it, to notice it, to rest. If the rest wonder why is it so popular, maybe that's a cue. Hopefully. Go back a little further in time in music. This is Coleman Hawkins, spotting. Thank you. Make it a little harder for us to walk past these things without triggering off this little package of information. Remember, we were talking about symbolism, working through the degrees. Then it's kind of timely because I'm going to be part of a second degree group in just a little while. If we pass on to the second degree, the first object that strikes us is the symbol of the eternal and self-existent deity, who will reward or punish us everlastingly according to our works. In this degree, we are solemnly reminded that the all-seeing eye of providence observes our actions and notes every improper word or thought to produce against us at the day of judgment. That's about as much as we could conjure up. Thoughts from a different era, isn't it? The star of this degree points to that supernatural appearance in the heavens, which directed the wise men of the East to the place where the incarnate God was prepared to receive the rich tokens of our adoration. When the veil of the third degree is raised, we are presented with a series of historical facts and ceremonies which illustrate many passages of the Jewish scripture and refer to the fundamental truths of our holy religion. It is truly called a sublime degree, for it contains the essence of purity and light. This degree has a reference to the Christian dispensation when the day of salvation is more fully revealed, atonement is made for sin, and the resurrection from the deadly plane communicated and affirmed by the resurrection from the grave. I wonder how that slipped through the censors when we were developing ritual. Originally, it was felt to be far too Christian. We're more of an ecumenical spread, aren't we? That's a claim, no. As I live and breathe, the number of times I've sat through and worked the Feldenkrais degree, I've never had those impressions. How would my Buddhist brethren feel, or my Baha'i brethren feel, or my Muslim brethren feel, or think about that? What are the parallels? To Masons at the time of the development of the degrees, the first and second degrees were taken together, formed a natural progress which was understood because of the similarities in the method of trade organization. The common practice was the binding of an apprentice and, after a definite time his qualifying as a craftsman or journeyman. Although it was not many years before the Masonic sequence and presumably the reasons for it were affected by other influences in the craft, and it became common for both degrees to be taken on the same evening. This passed the initiate to the basic status of craftsman as understood in all trades, and it was in this grade that the tradesman remained unless he became an employer or so took a separate and deliberate step of a more responsible nature. In that case, he became a master, something to which all tradesmen need to aspire in the same way that an apprentice would seek to qualify as a craftsman. The third degree in masonry, that of a master mason, was similarly looked upon, and its serious aspect was something not to be undertaken lightly. Only from this class could the master of the lodge be selected, and the higher posts of the craft were only open to those who were in the third degree. William Preston emphasizes the status of this degree like this. Here, the ancient landmarks of this society are preserved, and the expert and ingenious craftsman is qualified to discharge every duty in the craft with honor and reputation. To the knowledge of this degree, few indeed arrive, but it is an infallible truth that he who inherits merits the privilege of a master mason here meets with his just reward, a reward which amply compensates for all his past labor and assiduity. By employing his abilities in the pursuit of useful knowledge, he demonstrates his wisdom and is justly entitled to respect and veneration. From this class, our rulers must be selected, as it is from those who are capable of giving instruction we can only expect to receive it. No need to carry on here about the startling message that this conveys. This is, I think, easier said than done and harder to accomplish without some strategic development. We don't subscribe to this notion much anymore. It's almost as if we've traded that off, traded off the merit with popularity or slothfulness. You don't have to do too much, and your turn will come when you can make a fool of yourself in the East by being unprepared, such that it's hardly even expected anymore that you're going to be a font of information, guidance. And lucky is the lodge that has to tolerate somebody ill-equipped that's read that line and thinks that they are the bee's knees because they are the bee's knees. Pyrrhic victory, wouldn't you say? Takes more than attendance. Why would I ever reward somebody for showing up at a rehearsal or a practice? Why? If you don't want to be there, okay, go and grab a baseball glove and practice that, or go and wash your car or cut your grass. It's all good. I only want to talk to, we're all designed, all this work is designed for people that want to be there. Not be there so that thinking they can act silly and carry on, be loutish. No. You have to be able to button it up and listen. Somebody's got to do the arranging. You want to do your own thing? Best you do that by yourself. leadership isn't an imposition. We could use a rule of thumb. If, and it is, a process of character development, then what does your action, what does your level of activity and interest, your level of scholarship echo? What does it say about commitment? I think it's about our starting point to readjust here in Upper Canada has to do with communication. Not, oh my goodness, not the upsell. And no, we need to at least think that we're chasing people away with a stick by keeping the same, doing the same tedious things. It's just boring. It doesn't work and it's boring as hell. You know, how do we communicate genuineness and authenticity? How do we communicate character? Inspiration. How do you do that? Well, there are places, I think, that teach us about atmosphere. Atmosphere. It's in part why here we use, we imply, we embrace, and we enjoy music. It creates atmospheres, atmospheres in the mind that are conducive to reasoning things through. Not every single day. You know, it's a, remember those preachers from the 50s that, you know, they came up, helped us develop the cliche about being preachy. No, but nobody paid attention. Blah, 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 blah. Do it like this or we're all going to die and go to hell. Blah, blah, blah. It didn't work. And then we find out you guys had secrets. Nasty, nasty. Oh, do you think that credibility is coming back? Preaching has a similar effect in Masonic circles. Be quiet. Don't do that. How do you express that? That's a, you're looking for the formula? You're looking for the tagline here? Give it some thought. Do you do it by talking over other people? The bugger of it for the likes of me, is like this brand of my brain about the motto, Aude Vide Tace. I just can't get away from the what that's about. Listen, watch, be watchful, and do it in silence. Diabolical, as much. Something to think about. I'm grateful for your attention, giving me an opportunity to share what I've heard in the conversations that I've had with you over the past couple of days. We'll move forward. Here in Upper Canada, we're moving forward cautiously and we're reviewing things. Part of that is that a sense of self-consciousness. Part of it is a sense of the enormity of what we're seeing. When you look honestly out there, don't necessarily see things as you want them to be. You see things as they are. So the good, the bad, and the ugly, as the movie goes. But there's also this sense of prevalence. Do we prevail? Well, we've always been a bit audacious. One thing you notice about us is, and I'll talk about this in upcoming shows, is how protective we are. Why do the principles of business not necessarily apply easily to the craft? Well, there's a reason. Oh my goodness, there's a reason. And it's a Billy. We're more like family. Yeah? Remind me to talk to you about about Alexander the Great and his family. Give me a little anecdote to make us all feel a little better about our turmoil. Here's a little Wilbur Hardin to help us exit with some grace. We'll move forward, do your work, and exhibit balance, good judgment, a sense of spirit, well-being. And we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of days. Myth, those acts of random Masonic kindness, eh?
Thank you.